bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hey friends, it's me.
Bryce Castillo.
Hey everybody, that's me. Everything's going great and we're having just a fun day here on the good 420 weed day. Hello.
Oh, I still don't know that reference, but it's fine. It's fine. You guys will explain it to me later.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what I do know? Is the gaming newsletter, the video game newsletter by Mr. Bryce, who's been killing it. I've really enjoyed it, Bryce. Congrats for keeping this thing going.
Thank you very much. It's
just been fun to watch you just run with this thing and see it develop and adapt and, you know, the new content.
Yeah, thank you. I've been very pleased with, you gave me some really good feedback a couple weeks back. And I've seen, you know, response rates or click rates go up and, so I appreciate it.
I just want to talk about what you've been doing there. And you do things in it, which I like the fact you're playing around. Like you started doing the 2-sentence video game reviews.
Yeah, that's right.
Love that.
There are like 100 million Apple Arcade games out there. And you don't really, because if you're in it, you get those games for free, like a buffet service. And so you don't need too much pushing to tell someone like, hey, go play this high quality game. You just kind of need to know what it is and a link to it. So yeah, that's been a fun thing to do more of the shorter reviews.
I am going to make a suggestion now. You ready?
Okay, ready.
And this is, it's an easy one and it's one that I try to do periodically and coming up at the top of it, go, hey, if you like this, share this on Twitter. Put that up prominent. And I found that, like, I periodically, one of the things we'll talk about, like, with my book in a moment, but all every few days, I'm like, hey, could you guys retweet this? And I'll get 20, 30 retweets. People retweet it, you know, and that's all of a sudden extends out beyond my network. And I see some other people pick that stuff out there. And if people really like a thing and you go, oh, yeah, if you like this, just share it with people. Mm-hmm. If they value it, they'll go, oh, cool, I want to share this because I value this. So don't be shy about asking to do that, because it's, if they really like it, they'll feel like, oh, cool, I can give this gift or this thing I enjoy to other people.
Justin, you do a similar thing where you ask people to reply to your emails. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is that obviously there is the kind of constant trying to stay out of the spam folder, trying to stay in the inbox. But also, I tend to think that it just makes it makes it richer. It makes it more of a community thing, and both in terms of the algorithm and I think the general health of the community. It's just good when people want to have something to say. It's good for you to know that you're creating something that is inspiring conversation.
That's definitely a next step I'd like to look into. You know, I've been sharing, because you can share a permalink to the emails on Twitter when I write them, and so I've had to add in a sign up link into the emails, because I've had people like click on it on Twitter and say, oh cool, now where do I sign up? Because they're seeing it's kind of having to do double duty. But yeah, I'd like to, last week or a couple of weeks ago, we were doing like people would send in just the things that they're playing and what they liked about it. And that was a lot of fun, you know, having kind of a back and forth conversation and talking about similar titles. So thank you. I'm looking forward to continuing to change and iterate and try to make it feel unique for what it is.
Well, and I'm just even saying, not even the user feedback part. I'm just saying like that's a great thing you did, the Nautilus putting there for people to sign up for, but like try it on top a couple times. Like, hey everybody, I'm just trying to increase, you know, the people who think of somebody, you know, who might like this, forward it to them. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you will get a big bump. You will absolutely get a big bump. Okay. And periodically doing that, because the beautiful thing is it's like right now, my book is free for Amazon Prime members, right? So I get to push that out there without asking money for people, yeah, which I love. That's easy for me to push because I can say, hey, everybody, check out my book. By the way, for Amazon Prime, it's free. I'm not asking anybody to buy anything. And it's easy to push things that are free. So like you're and think about that differently than a product you're selling. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a relationship between them, but really there is nothing. They just click a thing and now they get this thing for free. So don't be afraid to ask people like, hey, I'm trying to spread this. Could you help me out? You guys have been like, think of it as your tight little small community here, but put that up top a couple times and say, if you know somebody might like this, do this. Because people, we make assumptions about what people are going to do. We make assumptions, well, if they know somebody like it, they'll do it. No, we've got a million things in our mind and we never even considered the fact of like, oh, I can help Bryce out by sending this to like, I know five friends who might like this, you know? And then if you put that in their head, people go, oh, yeah. So
yeah,
just put that thought out there.
And I think, you know, on the creator side, I think we get a little like it kind of feels tough to ask people because you don't want to ask people for too much, or if you ask constantly, because I mean, that's like the YouTuber joke, right? Like, comment and subscribe. Like those words are, it is such good hygiene to do that sort of thing that the words have become meaningless because everyone says it constantly. And so, like, I look on websites that have, like, the social share icons, like, tweet and Facebook and put an orchid and send it to VT. Like, you know, that's there because it's good to tell people to ask that, but it's systematized and it's so obtrusive and meaningless.
And those, yeah, the problem with those is the people like, no, I checked off the list of asking people, and you go like, oh yeah, you have a bottom, you have like at the bottom of a blog post, they have this thing, which like, one, nobody sees that. People don't know what to do. I am very much a big believer in direct calls to action, to things that can be done right now, and telling people exactly what I need you to do, what would be great for you to do. And the problem, and like a problem with YouTube is like, oh, comments or subscribe. Somebody's like, I guess if I have something to say, I will. The best ones are like, hey, what's your favorite game you're playing this week? Oh, you know, people will write that out, you know,
yeah.
Ask YouTubers who say, give a specific thing to say in the comments. Like, hey, what was your favorite 80s thing? Something relevant, whatever. Boom. You'll get 10 times the response because all of a sudden everybody, there's a way to think about kind of in psychology. And the idea is that like, if I want a behavior for somebody, if I want somebody to do a thing, if I put a thought into their head, it's easier for them to complete it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if I say, oh, you know, my favorite 80s movie is, you know, other than Star Wars, is Blade Runner. 80s movies are cool. What's your favorite 80s movie? Everybody's thinking of this now.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, if you have one, put it in the comments. Okay, I'll put it in the comments. If you're like, just put a comment, won't work the same way. You know, it's like, you know, try not to think of an elephant, you know. So
we get a lot of success out of that with Cord Killers, you know, whenever we have a topic that kind of goes long or where we don't resolve something or it's kind of open ended. We, you know, make a point to call it out. Hey, if you have a thing, send it to cordkillers@gmail.com. And then, you know, we do. Those tend to be the things that we get more emails about is when we say, hey, here's this hotly this big topic for us. Now you chime in, and we have that as a part of the show, you know, every week. And like we get a lot of that with Night Attack, right? Like right now for the past little while, we've been asking people kind of how they found out about the guys and the show. And we read people's stories, you know, pretty much every week now. And, you know, so yeah, having a more direct ask, is definitely more valuable.
You know, it's the fill in the blank. Cause there's things that I've noticed that if you send an email to five people in a group, hey, can somebody give me an answer to this? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Either it's going to get answered immediately or never, because either, you know, somebody will be right in the moment to do it, or they'll go, somebody else has it. Somebody else has got it. I don't need to take care of this. Yeah. And it's one of these things that we often think about, like, okay, you know, somebody else will care. There's a lot of these little things we have to think about how they do it. And one of the things I think is super helpful is if I said, you know, Bryce, I'm working on a new video game. I know you're really busy right now. And so I won't bother with you this week, but next week I want to talk to you about this video game. And I've got this really cool idea for, you know, a first person shooter that takes place, I'm making this stuff, in a forest where you shoot mice out of the guns.
Oh.
Don't worry about it right now, but next week I want to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly you're thinking about it. You're making your own image of it. And then, yeah, I mean, it, you know, priming the pump. so to speak, really, really helps out a lot, especially in an open-ended scenario like that, where you're looking, you're going to ask a question or what have you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're basically half pitching. But speaking of half pitching, I mean, the newsletter is what it is. We need to talk about how the girl beneath the sea is doing, Andrew.
Yeah.
Well, Sloan appears and seems to be doing fine. So Girl Beneath the Sea is my new novel for a new series I'm doing, the Underwater Investigative Unit. And it debuted on April 1st. And I got very, very lucky. And I will tell you, I am very much a believer that there is situations in your life where opportunity, other people, and lucky, lucky situations. And I got lucky. And that was... Amazon has this thing called like Prime Reads or Prime First, which is basically people who put out books will go to Amazon and will pitch to have their book part of this. And what it is for 1 month, the book is given away free to Amazon Prime members. Now, I, as an author, I get a little bit of money for this, but really it's a way to get kind of readership for it. And so there's a pitch. Amazon then goes through there and selects which books are going to be on that list. And so I was pitched and then I got selected. And so my book was on that list that went out to 100 million Amazon Prime members of like, hey, you can get this book for free.
Yeah.
And again, I do it because it's a payday from that. I do it because it's a great way to bring people into the funnel of reading the book and then hopefully getting the next book and my other books. Yeah. So we launched April 1st. And by the end of the day, the book was number one on all of Kindle books on Amazon. All the entire Kindle store was number one. Stayed that way for 8 days. Then these damn kids wanting to read, people wanting to improve themselves. It's now, we're 20 days in, it's number five. And I couldn't be more thrilled. The other books that are ahead of it are Kindle Unlimited books. Like it's Harry Potter's ahead of it. Seven Habits for Highly Effective People. Right. The Bad Seed. It's great. I'm so thrilled to be there. I'm right between Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets. And that's like, I've been like that for, a couple weeks in like, I might go on like a month. So, and also Amazon charts, it was the number six most sold book on Amazon.
Wow.
And I was like number 12 the week before. Then I went up last week to number six most sold book, which is like there, because of the way New York Times bestseller list sort of looks at ebooks and things like this. It's not exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just explain as I best understand it. You can correct me, Andrew, if I get any detail wrong, but effectively the New York Times bestseller list, which is universally understood in terms of fame to be this place of glory. The way that they do that is number one, murky, and number two can be boiled down to they call like 20 to 50 bookstores in New York City and they ask them what people are what people are buying. And there's ways to game it. It's a little shady. So Amazon creates their own rankings, but these are their definitive New York Times bestseller style rankings. And you could objectively say, and I would, that at least there is more data and more verifiability that goes into these rankings because Amazon does have such a dominant position in terms of book sales, not only physical, but also in terms of ebooks. So the fact that you are in the top on the list at all is insane. The fact that you started at 12 is fantastic. And the fact that you have now gone up to six is something that is certainly to be commended and that does not happen easily. This is not something that just kind of falls out of one's pocket. It means that the book is good. It means that it's finding a readership. And the fact that you have as many reviews as you do at 4.5 stars shows the quality. Yeah.
And
4.6. 4.6.
There we go.
The Amazon charts, so they have like most sold and they also have like a most read chart, which I think is really interesting because when you have like this free element to it, right, you want to hope that people are doing step two. And it looks like it debuted at 15, which is fantastic. That's fantastic because it means that not it's not just people, vacuuming up all of the free things that Amazon gives them, but you're actually getting read and from the reviews, people are really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's the most gratifying part. Exactly. It's not just people go, oh, I like this cover. Let me pick it up and whatever. So, right. This happened because I've got great support. You know, I've got my publishers, Thomas and Mercer, which is owned by Amazon Publishing. Fantastic team there. Work with my agent, who for me for years really wanted to partner me with me at Amazon because she thought they would make a really great fit because of where my audience was, where, you know, the kind of books I did, whatever. And I'm lucky. I think I'm a good writer, you know, but there's a lot of really good writers out there and that there's not a shortage of good writers out there. And you just, you know, I'm just grateful. I'm just very, very grateful because, you know, I can look at the Doctor Strange amulet and I can see a different universe where things played out differently, where I didn't have the people who were helping me that helped me. So,
yeah.
And, you know, and like, it starts with, you know, Justin, you know, to be honest with you, it started with this guy, listen to me, you know, all my stupid stories. And then one day I'm like, this poor kid, all I do is I tell him, I have an idea for this. I have an idea for this. And he's like, great. It's the guy with ideas who never does anything about them. He never said that. But I, hearing myself, I go, I'm that guy.
No, no. Come on, be real. We would probably get about 25% of the way through the idea before we would abandon it. But there was always, we would always start. There was always a concrete start to the idea. Yeah. But look, I mean, I think that there was, you know, we've talked about this kind of origin story a few times, but it bears mentioning again in a happy moment in the sun. But you were in a field that was really, really dependent on a lot of other people in television. And while television was its own track, I think not only you really dedicating yourself to writing and leveraging the platforms that you had to make it more of a success was not only a real model to follow in terms of what it takes to dedicate yourself to make yourself better. And then also how you can find an audience, like you developing as an author, and now you are not just an author, you are somebody that looks at things from a much more meta perspective. It's not just, you know, writing the thing that you think is, you know, on your mind right now. You are thinking in terms of bigger arcs and franchises, and you now have business partners that are recognizing that. And that's, you know, an overnight success, 10 years in the making.
Yeah. And something like the Amazon first reads program, right, where people kind of get a first taste for free. Like, I think that's so smart from a logistical standard or standpoint where, you know, my understanding is that, you know, publishers really are really interested in series, and they really want not just one book, but something that can be more than one book and have can develop a fan following and can have continuity and serialization and stuff. And this is a very strong, I think, business industry move to get people in the door. You know, we see this not just with books. You see it with games a lot, right? With we're giving you the game free, and they want people to buy the DLC or the next game or whatever it is. I think it's really smart.
I think also there is a commitment that in art more, and this is a lot of what I got from Andrew working with him initially, is, and I wound up kind of taking him to the Go game, but it's like, you have to be really, really serious if you want to be in a silly business, right? And we can all agree that, you know, although it takes a lot of effort, you know, writing stories, being creative, being an artist, you know, it can be a bit of a silly business, but you need to put in that much more effort and time so you can separate yourself from something that a lot of people will do for free because they want to try their hand at it or they have these ideas in their head. Andrew, I know from the earliest, you know, has always kind of thought about, and we have always agreed, you know, that there's the Steve Jobsian quote of like real artist ship. So it's like the point is not necessarily the idea you had in your head. The point isn't necessarily, is it exactly perfect? The point is, can you get into a position where you're making it at the highest possible quality while delivering it to the people that want to get it? And that's something that I think has certainly been a huge success for Andrew in his writing career. And it's something that I think about all the time in terms of like, all right, what am I like? you can't skip episodes, right? You got to always make things that are good. You got to always like continue to improve. There is a relationship with the audience that needs to be maintained. And I think this is a sign that Andrew has grinded out on putting out great books and working really hard on them, but also making sure that they show up on time, making sure that they are listening to what the audience has thought about and improving. And that's, to me, this is not, I mean, you can point to a bunch of different reasons as to why this popped, but nothing is possible unless you have learned all these lessons coming into it.
You know, a thing that I've thought a lot about is the, you know, we often look at like, hey, how do you make it, which is an important question to ask. And the answer is one is you make a thing. Now, you know, and that's, you know, so many people talk about, and I look at my friends who are working jobs they're not happy with, who would love to be more involved in the creative industries. And the difference between them and, let's say, my friends are doing creative stuff is my friends are creative stuff. One day said, I'm just going to make the thing and ship it. I'm just going to put it out there and I'm going to keep doing it and repeat it. And it's really as simple as that. And people, it's a secret to success. Not caring if this is the right way, but just making a thing happen. And people waste more time trying to decide, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? And they never get anything done. And they're 10 years later going, well, I make sure when I do this thing and the next thing you're too old to make something happen in the way you would like. The other thing, though, is that once you do a thing, you make a thing and you have a success, a first one is how do you not F that up? And I've watched so many people I know screw it up. The first thing that happens is overconfidence. The first thing that happens is like, I got a published novel. I'm now a novelist. Now I'm an expert on all things writing. And I was like, I told myself like, nope. It's a path. It's a journey. Cause I would read books by really good authors and go, man, this was a crappy book. How did this happen? And I'm like, this person who's a way better writer than me made mistakes, got arrogant, did whatever. And I said, I don't want that to happen. Relationships with publishers and stuff is like, when I get a deadline, I may ask for extensions or stuff or whatever, but I'm always clear. I'm always like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Can we get an extension? I always work within that. I don't push that. I don't abuse that at all because I want to have a great relationship with my publishers. I want them to know I'm reliable. And I realize that I'm in an industry where most people are unreliable. You know, publishers often give people deadlines thinking that like, well, it might take another 3 months or 6 months to get this thing out of the writer, or the writer may come back and say, oh, I don't have it. The muse didn't strike. I'm like, I never want to be in that situation. Like, I want to deliver.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just trying to figure out like, cause you know, I know I'm going to make mistakes. I just want to avoid the ones that I can see coming, you know, that's my goal.
Yeah.
And that's building trust with a business partner. You know, that's the kind of behavior that gives you leeway and earns you credit and shows that like the next time, you know, you realize so much, especially in entertainment, how many decisions are made where a bunch of people that you'll never in a room you'll never see are making a risk analysis decision. And it doesn't, and so much goes into it. It's the reason why television production's so hard, because you're often dealing with people that you haven't dealt with before. And so the known commodity wins. And so if you become a known commodity, what do you want to be known for is ultimately the reason why you have the work ethic. Because if you are known for delivering on time, and being easy to work with, then when those risk decisions come up, then you'll be the least risky option and you will do well from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you find, the enthusiasm, like I have a wonderful agent and I have a great relationship with her. One is that I do whatever she tells me, you know, like her advice, you know, I mean, if I don't have something, I'm going to do it this way, whatever. I listen to her advice. Yeah. I deliver. I try to look good. And I think that it's worked out really well, because once I realized that she said, all right, I want to work with you, I'm like, I got to live up to this. I haven't arrived. I've got to earn this now, you know? And it's when you sit in an office and you're looking at, you know, a jewelry box that was given to her by her, you know, again, I'm going to name drop here. You know, when the jewelry box is given to her, you know, by her good friend, Carrie Fisher, and you look over on the wall and you see a book that was by her former client, Hunter S. Thompson, and you realize you learned the industry from Michael Crichton, and all of a sudden I can see myself shrinking in the chair, you know, going, I don't belong here. I really don't belong here, you know, and I'm like, I need to earn this. I got to work my ass off because, you know, you just, you know, I can't like clap my, like, yeah, I'm on same league as Hunter. No, idiot. You know, you're a person she likes and wants to work with because there's a potential there, but.
And for as intimidating as that is, right? Like that's, you know, her experience and her value to the relationship. You know, we talk a lot about like self-publishing and being in work for yourself. But like you said, Andrew, like that's kind of how people, they get cocky. They think that they know everything when really they knew one thing at one time. And, you know, one of the values of a larger publisher or a label or whoever is that they have a higher view of, you know, of whatever industry you're in. You know, there is some value in that. Not always, you know, and but I think in a position where you're at, where you're making good stuff, you're delivering, and you know, they can help, you can help each other, you know.
Yeah, you know. And so I'm still figuring this stuff out. I try to make myself very aware of how much luck factors into it. And I mean, I think I work my ass off. I absolutely do. But I also know that there are a lot of people who work really, really hard. And the reason they haven't had this sort of success is because they didn't work hard enough. It's because, like, and I know I've missed out on a lot of stuff too, though. You know, you find out afterwards, like, oh, we were almost put you up for this, but we did this thing. Oh, yeah, no, your producer waited a week to turn this thing in. You didn't get it, you know, and it's like, ah, okay. You know, so it's the other side of it too. But
yeah.
So, it's thrilling. It's very exciting. And I'm very grateful to everybody who read the book, left reviews for it. And man, I mean, putting out it, doing a new, like Naturalist, I knew was going to be a different sort of book, you know, and that was interesting to see that. And that Naturalist got selected for that same slot 3 years ago, you know, so that was the launch of the Naturalist. I think that was a big turning point for my career. And to have it happen with a second book was phenomenal. And now what's great is like, I look at all the people who are getting into this book, and I can see the numbers from all the people that are getting to my other books.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
and that's another discovery. Yeah. The benefit of having a big catalog because you are a prolific writer is when you have a hit. Boy, yeah. Is there a whole world for people to go and enjoy?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Gentlemen, do you want to do some picks?
Yeah. I got a pick. So, Doctor Who. It is not my pick because I was not really a fan of the season. So I will pick it. I did finish it. I mean, frustrating. I mean, very frustrating season. There's some good things. There's the older companion, I think, is probably the most. He's my favorite companion they've had recently. But, oh, geez, the rest. Oh, Hachi Machi. Here's my pick. It's on ESPN. It's called The Last Dance. It is a 10-part documentary series about Michael Jordan and the Bulls in the 90s. Even if you are not a sports fan, it is worth it just because that team was so indelibly printed on pop culture. And you just, it really could be a documentary about a band and all the inner workings inside of it. The first two episodes aired on ESPN last night. They're going to be airing two episodes a week for the next few weeks. The real kind of crazy thing about it is that there was a documentary crew that recorded behind the scenes with the 97-98 Bulls, the end of that dynasty, under the agreement with Michael Jordan, who controlled his own image rights, that they would never do anything with the footage unless he agreed. And he never agreed to anything until 2016 when he finally agreed to do this project. So this is Michael Jordan kind of being, you see some raw elements of it. And apparently it only gets rawer as you go in. But on ESPN, they are airing it without censorship.
Wow.
You hear all the F-bombs on ESPN when they air it live on Sunday nights. The edited version for all the families is on ESPN2, but it's It's pretty good. And you see a lot. I mean, very rarely at that level of fame do you get that kind of access in any field.
Yeah. Wow, that's super cool.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard the phrase cocaine circus. And so,
yes,
I'm all aboard, you know?
Yeah. And there is definitely another, a hateable figure, not unlike how people have coalesced around their ire for Carole Baskin. There is a GM, the GM of the Bulls, you know, basketball fans are aware of the story, but if you're not, you're just going to watch a middle manager effectively pull the plug on one of the most potent pop culture phenomenons of all time simply because he wants to prove that he's the boss.
Wow. Yeah. Super cool. Is that streaming anywhere? Do they have that on like ESPN Plus or something? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm sure that it's probably playing on ESPN. I know that this was a co-production with Netflix, and Netflix has the international rights. Oh. So, I mean, if there's a little VPN action in your life, you might be able to go ahead and stream it. But beyond that, it's probably on a web player somewhere with ads because they sold the living crap out of it on TV.
Oh, nice. I got a pick. I've been playing this for a couple weeks now on the Twitch stream, and I've really come to enjoy it. It's the new Final Fantasy VII Remake. This is a completely new retelling of the first part of the seminal 1997 RPG, Final Fantasy VII, but in
97. Because you want to know what's amazing? Is that you know, I don't leave my house. Final Fantasy VII is all the rage, and ESPN is wall to wall Michael Jordan. It's 97 all over again. this is everything 97 is back in a big way.
Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying this. I'm really enjoying this retelling of the game, and I was really unsure of if it would be any good because Square's track record with Final Fantasy games the past decade has been pretty bad. But this is a fantastic retelling of the story. They add a lot of new content. They flesh out a lot of characters who were more secondary in the original story. And I think it's really good. There's a lot that I look at and say like, this doesn't look good. This delivery or this performance is not good. This is like really weirdly structured there's some real big pacing issues on it, but I don't think I had had one of those big like nostalgia waves for any sort of like revival content until this. I mean, we did the stream on Friday playing it, and I got to this new section, and they have this very iconic music soundtrack to it that they've recreated, and just hearing it again in like full CD audio and seeing it in the moment and everything. It just, I don't know, it really excited me. So I think for all of its flaws, I really digging so far. I'm not done with it, but I hear that there's more to it. I'm really digging Seven Remake.
Well, I'm going to double down on a pick I made before, which I talked about, which is I've been really enjoying Stargate Atlantis. On, you know, it's on Amazon Prime, and you know, it's a show that, you know, Stargate, I think, was a great show, was a really fun show, you know, one of the longest running science fiction shows ever, like for one particular run of a series. Mm-hmm. And Atlantis was those writers, you know, sort of taking what they learned from there, the showrunners from there, and then doing a new series on this. And I just finished the first season of it, and I enjoyed it. I thought the characters were well done. Everybody's pretty smart. You know, they're dealing with sort of well-defined problems. And so I've just, you know, really been enjoying it. It's kind of just sort of nice kind of comfort TV.
Nice. Where is that streaming now? Now that the portal Stargate portal has closed.
Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime's got all three of the series on there. And if you never checked out the show, I, you know, it was one of these things that was like, you know, it was syndicated, and it was sort of these things that never got kind of the heat that other shows did, but you know, Stargate, the SG-1, that did 10 seasons. Yeah, wow. No Star Trek show's ever gone 10 seasons. Yeah. And so that went 10 seasons of that. And, you know, it just, you know, simple premise. We have this magic portal that can take us anywhere. where does it take us now? And what do we find? And there's over their story, you know, it takes, starts off the storyline from the movie and continues on from there. But, you know, just getting to the core idea of let's have a small group of people who are really interesting and have their own dynamic, put them in these interesting situations, the most interesting things we can figure out to do in British Columbia. And, you know, we're going to do a show about ancient Egyptian gods set in Canada. but then you appreciate that too, because you kind of go like, there's something to not having, you know, you watch like Star Trek Discovery, you know, or I haven't even seen Picard, but you're like, you got the money, you can do anything you want, but man, this is what you wanted to do. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the storyline, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Anyhow, that's my pick.
Cool.
Awesome, everybody. Thank you so much for the support for the book. And thank you everybody out there who has read it, reviewed it, whatever. Very, very, very grateful. And, you know, let's see if we can stay in the top 10 a little while longer. You know? We'll see.
Reviews. If you've read it, review it.
Review it.
If you've read it, review it.
The Girl Beneath the Sea. Help.
And it's been After.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.